And it is my pleasure to welcome three lead cast members of Farmers Alley Theater's new production of Camelot to the studio, along with one of the founders of Farmers Alley Theater, Jeremy Koch. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
I've got the mics cranked up.
Yeah.
But I'd like to focus with Jeremy for just a moment. Jeremy, you and I going back a while and previewing the season a couple weeks ago, and Camelot was something we certainly focused on at the time. This is a reimagining of the Lerner and Lowe, what was it, late 60s musical?
I believe 61. Okay, Julie Andrews, Richard Burton, Robert Goulet.
Beloved piece.
Beloved piece. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful scores ever written for musical theater, I think. And I think many people would agree with that. And so typically, it's this big, extravagant, lavish production with hundreds of people in the cast and enormous sets and costumes and props. And it makes it difficult for certain theaters to produce. And so a man named David Lee said, why don't we kind of reimagine it, shrink it down a bit, and have eight actors tell the story and really focus on that love triangle. And so we heard about this version and did some research, and here we are. So the audience still gets what they want. They get that classic love triangle story. You really focus on Arthur, Guinevere, and Lancelot, and you get that beautiful, gorgeous score. So the music is still there. A few characters are, you know, sort of eliminated, but you still get the story. You really get the story. And you actually, I find myself hearing it in a new way. You know, I find myself rediscovering and relearning the story and hearing with fresh ears and seeing it with fresh eyes. I think it's going to be awesome.
That's great. I wonder if we'll discover this hour that each actor brings something of him or herself to their interpretation of these characters. You know, they have their ups and their downs and their good points and their bad points. And it's entirely up to you to conceive of how to embody these people. So, Jeremy, when does the show open?
It opens October 4th. It runs through October 27th. One thing I wanted to stress that I'm not sure we stressed last time is that we have decided to sort of fall in line with other theaters in the community, and all of our evening shows will have a 7:30 start time, a 7:30 curtain. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. as usual.
Who's directing Camelot?
A wonderful man named Lee Buchholz. And some of your listeners may recognize that name. Lee used to perform here in Kalamazoo. He was part of the Civic CYT, the summer theater, the youth theater back in the day. And he was mentored by Kathy Mulay, who is our costume designer for this production. And Lee is wonderful. And he now runs the Derby Dinner Theater down in Louisville, Kentucky. And Lee brings, you know, another pair of fresh eyes to the production and is lending his vision towards this reimagined production where it's really basically like a troop of, we call them revelers, but like a troop of actors just telling a story and, you know, pulling things out of trunks and very, you know, much that style of creativity and collaboration. And let's just, almost like Peter and the Starcatcher, if anyone's seen that, and let's just grab what we can, and this is a tree, or you know, and this is a shield, and to really tell the story in a new way.
Yeah, sense of improvisation and make believe, but that's the power of theater, mm-hmm. as I have experienced it from the audience.
Yes.
Well, let's meet the cast, and I have to start with the king. I'm sorry, I have hierarchical tendencies that way. So welcome, King Arthur, or otherwise known as Dave Vogel.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Would you tell us your biography, if you would? I mean,
sure.
Fun to hear it from the actor's own voice.
My voice, sure. I actually studied musical theater for college. I went to Boston Conservatory, same as Jeremy here.
There's a connection.
Yes, which we were just chatting about. And then soon after, I got my union card, and I actually was very, very lucky to join the National Tour of Chicago, the musical, and I also transferred to the Broadway company. And so I did that on and off in different companies for a couple of years, and then the last few years I've been performing regionally, and it's always been my dream to do this show, so this is a very exciting time for me, I would say.
Now, when you joined Chicago. That's not necessarily a given coming out of theater school.
Yeah.
And it's mad. You need to become professional, like bam, like right away.
Yeah.
How long were you with those two portions of the show?
I would say it was collectively about a year. I was in both companies. And then actually they opened a company on a cruise ship with Royal Caribbean. And actually I went out there with a fellow cast member to open up that company.
But you were playing the same role for a year?
Same role on and off for 4 years about.
Oh, yeah.
So it was time to move on to something else, I think. But it was an amazing time, amazing show.
So when you are making yourself available regionally to theater companies, that's a way to stretch and become, you know, really build those muscles as an actor.
Well, and I would also say what I love about regional theater, especially, it's what I'm finding in this production, for example, is I sometimes find some of the most creative artistic experiences come from regional theater. You know, when you get into the bigger realm of national tour or Broadway, you know, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, you got to make the money, the producers, there's so many other things going into it. And when you're doing a production like this one, it just reminds you of why you got into this industry in the first place. It's the love of the theater. It's making art with fellow performers who love it just as much as yourself.
So when did you arrive in Kalamazoo?
We got here September 8th. And so we've been here about 3 weeks.
Did anyone give you a tour of the town?
Jeremy has been very helpful telling us where to go. I have family members coming to visit to see the show. So I've been trying to write things down of where to take them when they come visit. So,
but most of the time you are working full days at the theater?
I must say it's been a really lovely schedule. We usually rehearse at night. So it's been lovely to be able to, you know, go to the gym during the day and look over stuff and tend to your other needs before fully getting to rehearsal.
Okay. Well, I think I'd like to chat with your doomed lady love.
Yes, my queen.
Your queen.
The queen.
The queen.
Sarah Ellis, thanks for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
So did you get here on September 8th as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we all got in the same day. And I actually knew Kevin before this. We went to school together at Penn State, Lancelot. And then I just met David on this contract, but we're all becoming very fast friends. It's lovely.
Would you talk about some of your career highlights and path?
Yeah. So I grew up in Wisconsin, actually. So I'm from the Midwest in a really small town called Platteville. And my mom and dad were both band directors, so I grew up in a family of musicians. And then I went to school at Penn State University and got my BFA in musical theater there. And then pretty much right after I graduated, I spent a summer at a theater that gave me my equity card, so I was in the union. And then I've been working in and out of the city ever since. I was on the first national tour of a show called A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, which was really fun. And I've been working regionally all over the country, so it's awesome.
When you saw this role, was it sort of posted on a website that said Farmers Alley Theater is hiring?
My agent actually sent me the information.
So you have an agent who combs through these things.
Yes. And I heard through the grapevine that I was kind of being like scouted a little bit. Kathy kind of did a little research. And I have a lot of friends who have worked here in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Zoe Vonderhaar, and we did Oklahoma together. And then my friend Harrison Bryan, who was just here doing Avenue Q.
Yeah.
So a lot of people had worked here from my friend group. And so it's a very funny story. I actually sent my sides in from Paris, where my mother played Lancelot and Arthur. on the other side of the camera.
She was very good. We almost cast her as well.
My mother.
Your mother did what?
Yeah, so we sent in video auditions for this. We actually didn't meet anyone in person. And a lot of times it's typical where the artistic team flies into New York and you go in and you have a casting casting call and audition. But this was unique in that we sent in videos. So they sent us scenes from the show, and then you have a reader on the other side of the camera, and my mother was the only one available. So we were, and we were on vacation in Paris, so we read our sides. And so when I sent my video in, I was like, bonjour, like, I'm in Paris, this is my mom, she's playing boys. Like, it's just, you know, so it was really fun.
Oh, I see.
So, and she's like, you better book this job because you just took 3 hours out of our sightseeing. And then I did, so it works out.
Yeah, that's a great story, Sarah. And finally, let's talk to Kevin Toniato Naughton.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Lancelot. So I understand there's a Penn State connection.
There certainly is.
Did you grow up in Pennsylvania?
Yes, I was actually born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And that's kind of where my love for theater grew. I was always had an art love that was instilled with me through my parents, actually. Mm-hmm. They cultivated that love of the arts at a very young age for me. And so it's always something that I really loved, but something that I was a little afraid to do until a little later. I mean, I would give some private, like, scene work for my parents, but you could never get me in front of people to do it until a little later something hit and I said, this is something I have to do, or at least have to try. And so I did it, and here I am still doing it.
Do you find that there are a fair amount of introvert extroverts out there? Like, in theater, you think, oh, everyone's just attention seeking, and that's not true. There's actually a lot of introverted
people in the
arts.
And a lot of what I like to do is, ever since I was able to make a career out of this, it pays my bills, it makes me very happy, and I love to come back to school and my alma maters, and we would even do little master classes and just working with children and then seeing the people who really have the love but just need a little extra push. I love to connect with them, playing theater games, like trying to find that something that I know they have, and just trying to bring it out a little bit. And it's always a fun journey, and I love being able to give back in that way because they gave me so much.
It's like a theater is a religion in a way.
It is. It
is. You can believe in in the power of it. So were you in a situation where you played the same role for a year like Dave did? Or
Not to that degree, but I it's been a gift for me post-grad to be consistently working the regional circuit since graduation, and that has been a true gift. I've gotten to meet so many people. I've gotten to see a lot of parts of the country. And I've gotten to actually perform the same musical a few times. And each time is a wonderful experience because I get to strip away but hold on to the truth of what I was doing in that past production and just build upon it and build upon it, and always trying to find the humanity in who I am portraying for that given period of time. And it really is a wonderful journey, and each time I get to have the gift of repeating a show, it's fun to build on what you've done.
Oh, is that true in this case?
It actually is true. This is my third production of Camelot.
And were you Lancelot each time?
The first time I did it, I understudied. I was actually Sir Sagramore. So I have a very tender spot for Sir Sagramore, always, always. He's the honest knight, you know. And when I got to play it again was actually in Philadelphia at a theater right outside in at Act Two Playhouse in Ambler. A wonderful production with wonderful people. And then I get to come here and do it again. And I'm really, really excited about it. And I always like to say I don't always quite find them, but I always get deeper in discovering who Lancelot is and finding why he does what he does, how he is who he is. And that journey through this rehearsal process and working with some great collaborative artists.
Yeah. You'll say yes 10 years from now.
Of course I will. It's a gift to portray these voices.
Oh, well, Camelot opens at Farmers Alley Theater on Friday and continues through October 27th. Details are online for tickets and times at farmersalleytheater.com. That's theater with an R-E. And the Phone number, Jeremy?
269-343-2727. And I do want to give a quick shout out and just say that this is another great coalition of incredibly talented people from out of town, three New Yorkers that you've just interviewed, members of Equity Actors Equity Association, and we have some great local talent as well, many of whom have a connection to Western Michigan University, so your listeners might be interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to Jeff Cachero, who's in the show, the Western connections are Hunter Buckingham, Estefan Kaiser is a graduate, Otis Kleinbergs is a graduate, and he also serves as the fight choreographer, and Alexander Papanastasopoulos. Yeah!
Yeah!
How do you like that? That was pretty impressive, I think, if I don't say so myself. I also want to say that Heather Folsom is our dance choreographer as well. So, yes, please call and get tickets. You do not want to miss it.
Let's jump into this beautiful score that pulls you through mm-hmm. the entire story with kind of one of the introductory numbers, the famous Camelot. And we'll be back with the cast of Farmers Alley Theater's production, Dave Vocal, Sarah Ellis, and Kevin Toniazzo-Notton, as well as Jeremy Koch. And keep listening for more details on this upcoming production.
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. But in Camelot, Camelot, those are the legal laws. The snow may never slush upon the hillside. By 9 p.m. the moonlight must appear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot.
That's the title song of Camelot, which is a Lerner and Lowe musical. Jeremy, you said it opened in 1961, and this updated and fresh chamber version will be staged Friday through October 27th.
That's right. And I just want to make a quick announcement that we are doing our traditional student night this Thursday. So again, if you have some listeners here who are students here at Western Michigan University, please have them come this Thursday night, the 3rd, where all students with a valid ID can see the show for $5.
And it's a way, it's actually in some ways a symbiotic situation because the cast will learn so much as they play the show for a live audience.
Theater is nothing without an audience, right? So we need that. So please come. And there are, like I said, many Western current students or graduates, so you'll want to see them and support them. And then going forward, you know, students can always reserve for only $15 for advanced sales, or they could come and try to get student rush the night of for $10. So just a way for us to really support students and give them a way to see the show at an affordable price.
I would like to maybe plunge into the story. For those of us who don't know the King Arthur story, it's a quick, I mean, I do know the King Arthur story, but it's a little fuzzy because so many people have done so many versions of
right.
it. Okay, King.
Take it away, Dave.
I guess the best way to sum it up, it's basically post what people know as The Sword in the Stone. So written by T.H. White. Actually, the full, I guess, anthology in a way is called The Once and Future King, which is several different stories, starting with Sword in the Stone and ending with technically where La Morte d'Arthur would pick up, which is the death of Arthur. But it's basically everyone you remember. So it's King Arthur. He was known as Wart before he pulled the sword out of the stone. And basically, the musical picks up where he has been king for a number of years, and he immediately meets Guinevere, who will become his queen. And I guess something that has been eliminated, but we do mention, is Merlin, who was basically his teacher, which he refers to many times during the musical, wanted to tell Arthur that he would come across Lancelot, but he didn't tell him how. So basically the musical is how Lancelot comes in and comes between Guinevere and Arthur.
That wasn't very helpful of Merlin, really.
I know. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to tell me.
Yeah. So Merlin really has taken a back seat at this point in Arthur's life. To me, one of the things I think about with the story is how it seems to start with optimism and innocence, and the characters end up a lot more experienced and a lot wiser, if not necessarily happier. But it's so true to how life sometimes is. Anyone can remember back to being a little more naive and unsure of things. And this is a story about how life will forge you.
Happens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Guinevere, as the woman who loves both Arthur and Lancelot, you have a very complicated path to tread here.
Certainly. I love what you said about innocence. That's exactly the trajectory, I think, of Guinevere. You see her at the very beginning of the show. She runs on stage and sings Simple Joys of Maidenhood. And it's what it is, Simple Joys of Maidenhood. She's looking for courtship and love and all of the fun things that like a young woman is looking forward to when she becomes of age. And then she gets, you know, sold off to fix the, you know, help the treaty, basically. But then finds out that she is indeed, I think, in love with Arthur. But then this man comes into her life that's unexpected and exciting and is able to perform miracles and is kind of this otherworldly human that she's just kind of intoxicated by and she can't resist. And I think anyone can relate to, you know, having that person or idea of someone in your life that you want, and it's whether you decide to act on it or not. And I think that Guinevere is flawed, and we are like many, we all are, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the way that this plays out, you see the result of her decision, which is war and death. Unfortunately, which is so interesting because in Simple Joys of Maidenhood, that's what she wants. She wants men to fight over her, literally. So it's interesting that she's kind of prophesizing the entirety of the story.
Why don't we pause and listen to Simple Joys of Maidenhood? And we'll be back with Sarah Ellis and the rest of the cast of Camelot at Farmers Alley Theater, opening on Friday.
St. Genevieve. Genevieve, it's Guinevere, remember me. St. Genevieve, St. Genevieve, I'm over here beneath this tree. You know how faithful and devout I am. You must admit I've always been a lamb. But Genevieve, St. Genevieve, I won't obey you anymore. You've gone a bit too far. I won't be bidden bargain. Pleasure's gone for good. Shall a feud not begin for me? Shall kith not kill their kin for me? Oh, where are the trivial joys, harmless convivial joys? Where are the simple joys of me?
Will kith not kill their kin for me? We're with the cast of Camelot. And because Lerner and Lowe gave it such a you know, childish, sing-songy sound, you know she's too naive to know what kith and kin would do to each other.
Yes.
How bad that would be. So
it's all an idea in her head. It's all play, and which is what happens when you're a child, you know. You're excited. Little girls, like, you know, they dream of their wedding day. That's kind of what she's doing. She's dreaming of all the things she wants when she's now that she has come of age to be courted, but then she gets sold off. and she's upset about that. That's what's really cool about Simple Joys of Maidenhood specifically, is that she's like, wait, why do we do this? She's questioning the system already. Mm-hmm. She's like, I want X, Y, and Z, but I am being forced into this. She said, marriage to a man that I have yet to lay eyes upon. Just when I have reached my golden age of eligibility and wooability, is my fate determined by love and courtship? No. I've got to fix the border. I've got to establish trade. I've got to do all these things. And she's 16 years old. So it's really interesting that she's already commenting on that. And that's such a testament to how Lerner and Lowe wrote Guinevere. And even though she is young and naive, she still has a worldliness about her that I think really attracts Arthur. And that's why they're such kindred souls. When they meet, they just instantly become so obsessed with each other and interested in each other, because they both have grand ideas about how the world should be, and they really work towards them. And then, unfortunately, Guinevere messes it all up.
How do they meet? Is this a meet-cute situation?
Yes. They Arthur sings a song called I Wonder What the King is Doing Tonight, because he's waiting for Guinevere. And then immediately right after, she comes out, sings Simple Joys of Maidenhood. They meet in the wood, and he actually doesn't reveal that he is the king. Mm-hmm. He actually says, well, actually, my name is Wart.
Mm-hmm. And she tries to convince him to run away with her so she can escape all of it. She's already ready for romance with this Wart character.
Yeah.
And then she realizes that, oh, it's the actual king. But it's wonderful, because then Arthur gets this beautiful moment to share the sword and the stone with her, and how he became king and why he feels that he's not quite adequate enough to wear the crown. But once he says that, what does he say about, until my eye beheld you?
Yes.
That he felt empowered to be the king that that everyone else knows him to be.
He's quite the rambler. he loves to talk, but what I love, and that, you know, Alan J. Lerner's done so well with the text, is he will go on this long tangent and she will give a simple sentence answer, and that completely aligns all of his thoughts. So
they make a good team.
They make a good team.
we were talking about how the characters mature over time, and I'm sensing a lot of, you know, they're trying to be as noble and good as possible, but they're very, very human.
Mm-hmm.
And not everybody. There's things I can relate to about being, you know, a young woman and excited about future and what might happen. But the burden of knowing that your choices and decisions affect an entire nation,
mm-hmm.
That I've not experienced anything
yeah.
like that. Even though there are people out there today who face those kinds of decisions, but
there's a really beautiful moment in the show where, and it's kind of a forgotten about song, but it's called What Do the Simple Folk Do, and Arthur and Guinevere Arthur at this point knows that Guinevere has had relations with Lancelot, and they don't talk about it. They sit there, and then they explore what other people do who aren't in the public eye. And it's very interesting, you know, I say other people have ways and means of finding respite, but royalty can never escape criticism and that very public eye. And so it's interesting that we comment on that. But yeah, it's true.
Right. Well, there must be something quite special about Lancelot to disrupt this, you know, situation where everyone wants you to work together as a team. And Lancelot, you I think noble is also a word that can be applied. And aren't you given some sort of superhuman abilities as in this character, in the story, as a knight?
He devotes himself entirely to his craft, and his humility and his grace are what he uses to kind of awaken these powers, and he has this powerful faith that can perform miracles. And in a sense, yes, and in our production, you really do get a sense of that. We invite you into that moment, and in some wonderful direction, you actually see him, that he actually gives of himself to give someone else a second chance at life. And it takes a toll on Lancelot physically as well. And it's at that moment as well that Guinevere even sees how far he is willing to go for someone other than himself, because he does have this moment when you first meet him. He is coming to Camelot with this divine purpose, and this is tossing the words humility and righteousness. And it's like, this man is anything but humble. Like, like, wait a minute. But he truly is a man of his character, and he doesn't just talk it, he shows it. And he is a man of high stakes and high expectations, because he will equally give that as well. His bark is just as strong as his bite. But it's at that moment when he gives of himself to awaken a knight that he mortally wounds in a joust that he did not ask to be a part of, but he complies. It's at that moment where part of that is stripped away from him, and you really get to see the human bear in front of the love of his life that he did not choose to feel this way. But that's a lot of what happens in life when you find the person that lights your soul on fire. You become someone completely different, and it's directed in that way that Lancelot does strip down the brashness that he can sometimes have, that unapologetic code, and you get to see more of the humanity in him. And
so it's not necessarily a falling, a failing, an introduction of evil.
No.
It's more love?
It's love. It's learning. He's constantly learning. And human beings, we're a line of trials and tribulations and undulations. And he is a true testament to that, because we all have an idea of, like we had said earlier, who we want to be, what we aspire to be, what we try to be. And it's quite impossible to keep that aligned, but we do the best we can. And Lancelot is torn in that sense, where he loves both of these people so much. But what he cannot do is lie. And he says that in one of the first things he says out of his mouth, and it's in a song called C'est Moi, where he says he is far too noble to lie. I'm far too noble to lie. And that is true. And one thing he does not do in this production is ever give a falsehood. He never fabricates. Wow. It is always earnest, even to his detriment, and even to the ruination of a relationship of someone who he came to see. He did not come for Guinevere. He came for Arthur. He loves this man's ideals. He loves the idea of might for right. And he will even sacrifice his reputation and his good standing and his teachings that he has instilled in himself and through all of his training, and this kind of almost this ascetic lifestyle, just for that truth. And I think if we all could take a little bit from Lancelot, even when we know our failings, if we could stand our ground in those darkest of times and say, yes, I did this, but here I am trying to still do right, might for right, even in the darkest times. And that's why I think he's quite a challenge and a gift to portray, especially in these rehearsals, and I cannot wait to play him again on stage, because finding that is always a wonderful journey.
Kevin Toniazzo Naughton is Lancelot, and the program, the shows start this Friday at Farmers Alley Theater. C'est moi, or if ever I should leave you. I'm going to leave this up to you for a Lancelot moment we could listen to.
You know, I would love for people to hear C'est moi. If ever I would leave you is so much Robert Goulet, who I love. But I think C'est Moi gives a voice to his character. Mm-hmm. And the Lancelot we don't always get to hear at first glance or first sound.
Let's do it.
Camelot, Camelot, in far off France I heard your call. Camelot, Camelot, and here am I to give my all. With an iron will. Had I been made the partner of Eve, we'd be in Eden still. C'est moi, c'est moi. The angels have chose to fight their battles below. And here I stand as pure as a prayer, incredibly clean, with virtue to spare, the godliest man I know. C'est moi.
From Lancelot. No, it's called Camelot.
Oh, I love it.
I just changed the name of the show to Lancelot.
It could very well be.
Kevin Toniazzo Naughton is Lancelot in this production. Sarah Ellis is Guinevere and Dave Vogel is Arthur. And we've had the joy of having them in the studio here for almost 1 hour, along with Jeremy Koch. And we'll find one more song to play, I think. But one thing that I would like listeners to be able to visualize is some of the look of the show, some of the ways that, of course, choreography and lighting has come together to make their impact and signature on this production. As you've talked about being in many different kinds of roles in productions and playing, sometimes playing the roles multiple times. I'm sure each instance has its own complete, almost sense memory or feel for how it was then and how different it can be each time because of the magic of people, vision, ideas. So what do you think you'll be taking away as your sense memory of Camelot at Farmer's Alley Theater? I'm looking at you, Sarah.
That's great. Okay. No, yeah. the cool part about the way this theater is set up in general is it's just so intimate. And you don't really have to, I mean, you always should bring a very, very personal humanity to the piece. But I feel like on stage, I don't necessarily need to, like, I am projecting, but it's also like the audience is so on top of us that they're just—it's like they're voyeurs. They're like just really in on the action. So, to have that intimacy in a piece that is normally very like sets and costumes and large things and lore. You know, and for to then scale all that back and to really feel the audience, and I'm really excited to get an audience in there so we can feel what they're feeling, because they're such a character in this piece. Mm-hmm. Because we speak as revelers, we speak directly to them, and then we go into the world of make-believe and play, and then we come in and out throughout the entire piece. Mm-hmm. So that will be really, really special for me as an actor who loves to be able to just share so much of herself, and then to get that instant feedback because they're so close will be really neat.
Are you comfortable in what you're wearing on stage, Dave?
Yes. I've never been able to wear a shield, so I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about wearing a shield. What I love is that we, with this specific production, you know, we don't have actual metal armor. We don't have a lot of those things. It's not needed. And basically, in general, the costumes allude to a time that is not now, that is before. And I think just in general with the setup of how intimate the set is, some of the most beautiful songs in the show that I feel personally don't get forgotten, but you know, you're just so used to the huge galore that is happening. The song Before I Gaze at You Again, which is just so simple and intimate, very violin heavy. It's just, that is really brought out. The simplicity of the piece is brought out.
I love how songs can be reduced to their cores, and what's made them great is still right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your impression of what's going on around you, the colors and the costumes?
Well, something that I'm definitely going to take away from the piece, especially with Lee's direction and Heather's choreography and Cindy Hunter, our music director, with her music direction, with the reduction of this production of Camelot, I love the invitation to the audience for imagination, where they are imagining with us. And I think that's a really special thing for this production, because we really do, as David and Sarah had said, you don't have this lavish, glorious, like everything is there for you. And we invite them to imagine and to explore and to play with us, in the sense of where we break the fourth wall and invite them in on our insights on who these people are. And I think that is something that I'm taking away definitely as a storyteller. And I think the audience is going to have a firmer grasp of the story, because the text is strong enough for you to get all of that with this more of a stark production. And I think that makes it all the more beautiful, because it relies on the words and the music and our movement and that invitation to imagination. I think it's nice to actually have that campfire feel, where the power of your words is what really can blow everything out of proportion and create this lavish world.
Well, I'm glad you're spreading the word. This is a Camelot that you really haven't seen before. I doubt anyone else has around West Michigan. So I think I'll leave it to Jeremy to wrap us up here. We mentioned the music and choreography. There's some great musicians that I happen to know and have played with in the orchestra. Horn player Bob Lewis probably being a vital part of the sound of the show. Cindy Hunter.
Absolutely.
Morgan Arndt.
Yeah. Orchestra sounds amazing. You know, as a musician yourself, I know you know what it's like to try to bring this music to life. And, you know, we take, like I was saying earlier, what's normally a larger, maybe 20 or 30 or sometimes 40 piece orchestra, you know, and we're asking, you know, seven musicians to bring this beautiful score to life. And they do it with major aplomb. So kudos to Cindy. I also want to say, you know, we're talking about how the theater looks. And of course, I have to give credit to some of the amazing designers that we have. Joe Badalamenti is our scenic designer and has created a really cool metallic industrial looking set for the actors to play on. Lanny Potts is our lighting designer. He's incredible. Les Batts is going to make everyone sound good as our sound designer. Jody Badalamenti and her props, which are incredibly authentic. Of course, Steve Hodges, our hair and wig designer, and Roger Burley is going to keep it all tight with his great crew. So I want to just say that, you know, this show, we have these eight or nine actors, you know, bringing everything to life. And of course, I didn't mention earlier, Daniel Schubkegel is also in the cast, and he is playing Sir Tom of Warwick. Yes. So he is the one that at the end, King Arthur, you know, even though he is feeling kind of broken and feeling kind of a little bit lost, you know, he finds some hope in this young boy and sends him off to tell the story. And that's what we do in the theater, right? It's all about storytelling. And this is just such a rich story that we're going to try to bring to life with this smaller cast and do it in a, like I said, a creative and collaborative way. So I don't think anyone is going to want to miss this production of Camelot, October 4th through the 27th at Farmers Alley Theater, 269-343-2727 or farmersalleytheater.com.
Okay. Thank you all for joining me here this morning to preview the show. I'm going to just throw on, you know, this lavish opening of Camelot. I'd rather not give away the ending, but we'll start at the beginning and hope that people will get stoked for Friday. And it's been great to spend time with you on WMUK. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.